via the text or phone.
Drive with Vicky Kerrigan on 105.7 ABC Darwin.
A lot of people think, and you may be amongst those who believe, that war, what is it good for? But wars are fought. It's definitely a part of the history of the world that we live in, and it's going to be a part of the future of the world that we live in. Our futurist, Marcus Barber, is here with us this afternoon. Hi there, Marcus.
G'day, Vicky.
We've been talking a little bit this afternoon about wars throughout history and how they have been caused as a result of religion or colonialism, expansionism, and in more recent times, terrorism or human rights, and you know, believing that we need to try to protect individuals who are being threatened. In the future, Marcus, what will wars, how will they be caused? What will be the causes of war?
I think you mentioned one of your callers talking about the concept of water.
Yes.
And for me, I think that's been on the cards for well over a decade, if we could see that coming, tension over water access. And that really ties back into the concept of resources. Most wars are actually fought over access to resources, be it a land resource or a food resource. And without water, you can't really feed each other, therefore we go to war to try and get access to the type of resource we need.
So, is there a particular part of the world that you think is going to be targeted if there is a war which is fought over water?
Oh yes, there's plenty of really high-stressed areas at the moment. Turkey's one, and its neighbours with the Anatolia Dam projects it's got going at the moment. Blocked off a fairly large river and then subsequently said to its neighbours, look, we'll let you have some water, but we need this for power, and that's going to cause a fair bit of stress down the paths coming up. China increasing its desertifications, rolling out at the moment its lack of access to water. Its Three Gorges Dam project's probably not going to work as it expected unless it can get its head around water usage. Australia's not immune. We are seeing what I would refer to as internal conflict wars starting to emerge between what you use water for at a small scale. It's not a real conflict, but the idea of, should farmers have the right to grow crops? Should miners get to use it for tailings dams? Can I use it to manufacture something? Can I put water in my pool? So the water tension, if you like, is starting to emerge all around the planet.
There wouldn't be a civil war in Australia over water, though, would there?
You have, I don't know about Australia, you've got some increasing tensions in the United States at the moment, particularly with its Colorado River, and farmers upstream wanting to access the water whilst the city's downstream saying, no, we need it for our leisure and bathing instincts. So in Australia, look, I don't think we're at that level yet, but the type of tensions that you're seeing are going to be played out in some particular way. So if you expand that into areas where perhaps the approach of community engagement is less evolved or more readily to jump to weapons, you can see how the lack of access to water can suddenly trigger high levels of conflict.
All right, so water and needing water could end up being a cause of future conflicts somewhere in the world. In terms of how people actually fight against each other, I mean, you know, you think back to the Middle Ages and how, or you even think back to World War One and how war and combat has actually changed. When we look to the future, how will it change again?
We're already seeing probably some signs, Vicky, at the moment in terms of things like what most people would have heard of as a UAV or an unmanned aerial vehicle. This is, for all intents and purposes, a remote-controlled jet that can cruise around without anyone on board. There's someone sitting in an office somewhere on the other side of the world just watching it fly around. There's in development unmanned submarine vehicles that can do the same sort of thing. Ultimately, the technology for the high-end users of weaponry is seeing their approach toward being more remote. But at the same time, you're seeing those without that access become more personalised in their approach. So we're seeing what's being referred to as an asymmetrical imbalance between high-tech versus low-tech approaches to conflict. For those with the technology, less people involved, lots of robotics, both on the battlefield and in recovery missions. For those without those, you're going to see a little bit more tension personally going into areas for conflict.
And I'm presuming that in Australia, though, are we actually trialling robotics? Does that mean that there could be lower casualties, less casualties?
Well, the idea of robotics and it ultimately offsets the need to put people on the battle space. You need more people to do it, though, because to monitor and some of the technology experts need to sit back in the office somewhere. So it actually increases the number of personnel you need to run it. For instance, a UAV, an unmanned aerial vehicle, requires between 9 and 18 people to monitor it in terms of its flight path versus one pilot. But it's a way of buying off the unpalatable nature of putting people on the battlefield and exposing them to high levels of risk.
But does that mean also then that the kind of people and the kind of skills needed for the Defence Force is going to change?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And you know, for all those people that say, look, I don't want my kid playing Wii or any of those gaming-type consoles, let them play because they're going to be in demand. If they have an ability to operate a joystick in a remote way, if they know if they're good at maths, if they understand the whole idea of vectors and remote monitoring, they will be in high demand in military circles, not just within Australia but around the world.
Wow. Okay. Marcus Barber, look, it's always great to get your thoughts. Tomorrow is a day where we actually, I suppose, remember those and we look back and remember those who have actually served our country and the world. So in that moment, some of us might have a few thoughts about where to for the future.
Yeah, and to me, I think every Australian should go to a dawn service and at least experience the chill of the air prior to dawn and understand at that moment, within minutes later, thousands of soldiers sacrificed their life.
Yeah, it always gets me. Gets me just you saying that there. All right. Thanks, Marcus.
Sorry, Biggie. Cheers.
That's okay. Bye-bye. I haven't. You know, it's only a feeling that I'm experiencing. I've been fortunate enough and thankful enough not to experience it firsthand, but I know possibly that some people who are listening to this afternoon, maybe you've actually served in combat or you have a loved one.